Welcome to the Fantasy Golf Degenerates Podcast.
Jordan Bell, Bird. Jordan Bell, Bird. Yo, yo. Jordan Belfort, stacking penny stocks while I'm flipping these birds. Sipping on Ciroc, trip them up with the words. I done popped the Molly and I think it's be my third. Jordan Belfort, Jordan Belfort. I've been getting dirty money, Jordan Belfort. Jordan Belfort, I've been getting dirty money, Jordan Belfort. Stacking penny stocks while I'm flipping these birds.
What is going on, DGen Nation? Kenny Kim here, bringing you another Fantasy Golf Degenerates podcast this week for the Waste Management Phoenix Open. As usual, I'm here with my favorite Canadian, Tyler Tambolin. Tyler, how are you this week?
I'm doing well, Kenny. I can't wait, man. This is a good one. I'm doing good, but I'm disappointed because this is the first time in, I think, 3 or 4 years now that I won't be down there for the Waste Management Phoenix Open. So we'll get to that. Before we get into it, I want to remind everybody quickly, this podcast is brought to you and presented and sponsored by rotogrinders.com. Got the new promo working. Everyone's reaching out, asking me about it. You can head on over to rotogrinders.com/dgen. Get yourself $10 off with the new combo pack. So you can get the golf package only, or you can get the premium and get yourself $10 off. But yeah, Kenny, a lot to talk about here, a lot to dive into, right? It was just a couple weeks ago and we were all over Finau, and now we got a different story to talk about. So I'm sure we'll talk about the Reed stuff, but how was your week, man? What do you want to get to first?
Yeah, well, before we get to Reed, because you know we're going to talk about that, let's talk about the tournament. Of course, the winner was Patrick Reed. We'll get to that here in a little bit, but all the guys who performed well, Palmer playing well, Xander actually getting over the hump, maybe the lack of fans and lack of having to deal with all his family and friends that week really did help him. Not really sure. You can't really quantify that. But he looked pretty good. Hovland out there doing pretty well. He surprised me a little bit. I liked him on Monday last week. I did talk about him. I ended up not playing him because I was a little bit worried about his short game. And of course, you know, his short game wasn't that bad. It looks like he's getting a little bit better around the greens, which is something that you should look for, especially when it comes to the U.S. Open here coming up at Torrey Pines in the future. I think I went ahead and put, and the way he played in that horrible weather, on Friday, or was it Friday or Saturday? One of those days, I think it was Friday. You know, I put a little bit on him at the Open Championship, so we'll see how it goes. The weather turns bad, gets windy. I think it was 50-1 there. I think he's viable for the U.S. Open again. U.S. Open also, as a future bet. I didn't see that number. I didn't check the number. I didn't bet it yet, but it's something I'm looking at. Willie Z in the top 10, after an eagle on his final hole. You know, the leaderboard was stacked going into the final round. Finau, Rahm, Rory, Xander, all Reed, all these guys up top. It was a great event. It was fun to watch. And Reed brought a little bit of juice. Now, go ahead. What did you think of the tournament?
Overall, I thought it was good. The funny, I pointed out last night on Twitter, the leaderboard was like Muirfield, man. It had we talked about the Rahm Palmer thing that always happens. They're right back there again. This time, Palmer actually outdid him at 9-under versus Rahm's 8-under. It even had the same quote unquote, scrubs there with List and Norlander, same two scrubs that were up there at Memorial. And then Reed, Finau, Xander, Rahm, like all those guys were the same guys that were up in the mix there. So I guess it was just sort of that combination, right? But this Torrey Pines setup was not quite to what we'll see or what we would expect to see at the U.S. Open, right? They said the rough was already super thick. We got all that. That goes a little bit with the controversy. But I think the other side of it was just an overall, man, great tournament. I love stuff like this. The cream rises to the top. It's not the, lowest scoring event. 14-under, Reed sort of dusted the field, even if you took him back. But, Finau right up there again, man, he did his thing. You said Hovland, it might have got better. But, man, if he had himself an around-the-green game, it would be insane what he could do, yeah, man. Some of the stuff, 73-71 on the weekend. And it looked like he could have shot 66-66 if he wanted to. Like, it just, yeah, for some reason, that's just not quite in the bag just yet. Remember, he's still young. So it's impossible. And we talked about it last Monday. I liked him a little bit more than Wolf. I said I'd go there if everyone's going to be there. And it still didn't pay my way. I didn't want to go back to Reed after he was pretty much all putter the week before. But that's the thing here, man. The last thing I'll say is, before we get into it, is Leishman. didn't hit a single fairway last year and won this thing. I say none, but he hit a couple, but you know what I mean? It was all short game and putter this year. I saw the stat yesterday. I think it was, I forget who posted it out, but greens and regulation, Reed was way off the mark. It was all to do with the short game around the green, that putter dropping eagles. And then, yeah. And the last thing is CBS is atrocious when it comes to coverage. I don't care about the Reed side of it. You can talk about whatever you want. When you're talking to the CEO, anybody, put it up in the corner. Let me see the shots, man. We complain about it enough. Sometimes it's whatever, but this was too much, man. And the funny part was, to me, actually, good segue into it, was Reed was knocking down 40-foot eagles and bombs to take away the lead and everything and during just run break. Away with it during the while they're talking shit about him. I was like, this is so great, man. And he doesn't know he's doing that there, but he talked about at the end, mental state, resiliency, everything that he's got going for himself. It's incredible, man. That Brooks calls him a cheater. He goes out and wins. Like there was other times, I can't even remember them all off the top of my head, Kenny, but this guy just thrives on that stuff and just actually goes out and wins. 9 wins now, some big tournaments. If you look at the courses that he's taken down, not just the titles and the trophies, but where they're played at, these are extremely tough courses, conditions, fields, everything that goes with it. The guy's a closer. It's incredible to watch. I love it personally.
Now, you know, speaking of Reed, I mean, he cheated. There's no way around it. Okay, we'll go into the situation. I think what Reed did was great. He bended the rules in his favor, but he definitely cheated. You know, I mean, the thing is, like, when that ball bounced the second time, okay, he said himself that there's literally no way a ball that bounces can be embedded, okay? And so the only way that that ball could feel embedded is if he manipulated the ground when he picked his ball up. And he was around the ball poking and prodding in that hole for about 15, 20 seconds. So, I mean, it's obvious that he's cheated. There's no doubt in my mind that he cheated. Now, the thing is, like, did he know he can get away with it because of what the spotter said? Yes, he knew that he can get away with it. That's why he cheated. And it's either, you can either think that's brilliant, like I sort of do, or you could think that's horrible for the game. You could think both ways, okay? Because he definitely cheated. There's no fucking doubt in my mind. I mean, the evidence is, he said it himself. There's no way a ball can be embedded when it bounced one time. And then when the rules official went in and poked around that hole, he felt a lip. The only way that that rules official would have been able to feel that lip is if Reed did something to the ground when he was poking and prodding there. That's the only way. That's the only way. Okay. And so, but the thing is, he was genius about it. Like, he was so brilliant about it. Like, well, when the spotter said that the ball didn't bounce, he was like, okay, well, then I, you know, it's soft. It's rained a bunch the night before. Okay. And then he, you know, he picked up his ball, which he's allowed to do. Now I actually talked to Brandon Chambly of the Golf Channel. We sometimes interact through DMs. And I talked to him, and his big issue was Reed palming the ball. Mm-hmm. That is not against the rules. Chambly actually clarified that the next day. He thought it was against the rules, but it's not. Now, is it integrity-wise a bad thing? Yeah, probably. You think Patrick Reed gives a fuck about that? No, not at all. All he cares about is winning, okay? And so then he moved the ball, asked the rules official to come, and of course he manipulated the ground, and the rules official felt the lip, and he got the drop. That's what happened. I mean, you can hate him for it, or you can love the villain. You can go either way. Now, the one thing that was in his favor is Roy did the same fucking thing. Roy did the same fucking thing. That ball bounced. There's no way that that ball would have been embedded on 18 on the same day. No way that ball would have been embedded. Okay. He picked up this ball and he just yelled to his playing partner, I think it's embedded. There's no way the TV cameras could see it on either shot because the rough was so tall. So there's no way that anyone, they followed the rules that they could, that they followed the rules enough where they wouldn't get caught cheating. That's what happened to both of them. Rory cheated too. Rory cheated also, people. Rory cheated. And the thing about this is what Rory said afterwards was that this is a common occurrence, that golfers do this all the time. Now, Xander said that that's not true. Brandel said that that's not true. But I sort of believe Rory. I think people do this all the time. I think it's an unwritten thing. The guys do this to give themselves a little bit of advantage. They're using the rules to their advantage. Are they cheating? Yes. Yes. But I don't think this is as uncommon as a thing as people might expect. I think this type of shit happens all the fucking time with whoever's golfing out there, especially under those type of conditions. I believe what Rory said, and this is a common thing. When they change the rules where a golfer can make this decision by himself, people have been using that to their advantage. And do I think both of them cheated? Yes, they both cheated, but they got away with it. They got away with it. And now you could say that's bad for the game, whatever. You could think like that, and I have no fault. I can't say anything against that, but I think it's good. I think people need bad people in the sport. It brings juice to the game. It brings eyeballs to the game. You know, and Reed is not a good person when it comes to the morals and ethics of golf. I mean, it's just a plain fact. But he does what he does to get away with what he can do. And one thing I did say on Twitter is, you know, he probably has less endorsements and sponsorships than any other elite golfer out there because everyone knows that no one likes him. I think he makes less money off the course than anyone does, inside the top 10. And because of that, the money he makes on the course is so much more important. So he will do whatever it fucking takes. If that means to cheat, he'll cheat. If he gets caught, so what? His image is already fucking tarnished. You think he gives a fuck what you think? He doesn't. Right. He does not. So he's going to use these rules to his advantage. And that's exactly what he did. And that's exactly what Rory did. What do you think?
I think it was a perfect flip right there at the end. You said it. He doesn't care. He's a known cheater. It's not going to change his image. It goes back to college days of stealing things out of lockers and in situations where he had to leave the college he was at. The guys there hate him, right? The Georgia Bulldogs with Kisner wouldn't piss on him if he was on fire was the statement that Kisner had made. So I think it goes right with that, Kenny. It's perfectly said that you put it there. He knows the rules. What Rory said is true too. There was guys out there that talked in certain interviews that estimated it happened 12 to 15 times a week. It's actually funny. I brought up the memorial earlier. If you remember and recall back there, the situation with Rahm and the two-stroke penalty absolutely did not mean to do it, was not the same, was not cheating. I'm not saying that. What the point was made there at the time when Rahm had that situation happen was if there was a camera on every guy that week, there would have been 20 balls like that that moved slightly right before they chipped it up. It had nothing to do with trying to cheat or anything there. This scenario, definitely different. I think the interesting point you made and that I kind of agree with is that Reed knows the rules so well. If, you know, back the old adage, if you ain't cheating, you ain't trying. This was almost premeditated.
Yes, yes.
I'm gonna ask her if this ball, the first question he says walking up was nothing to do with where's my ball.
I think he knew it bounced.
Absolutely. He needs to say the answer.
Yes.
He sees, and everything, if you saw, and for those that don't know what I do in real, I'm in sales. I've been my whole life, trained them, taught them, whatever. And I'll tell you what, the pivot he made after the guy said, "Can I check where your ball is?" He said, "Well, that's the only way you'd know how to, isn't it?" And he goes, "Oh, yeah, that's right." And he goes, Yeah, I felt the lip. He, instead of saying, yeah, that's, you know, and anything and agreeing and all this, his immediate flip, Kenny, it's a sales trick, was, oh, so does the pin go here or there? Because when you're in sales, you're not looking for a yes or a no, because if you get a no, you're screwed and you might not be able to get back to a yes. You have to start overcoming objections. So his immediate flip, and this is a sales thing, was which side? Because then it's a right or a left. It's not a yes or a no of does the pin go or does his tee go? And you see how the old gentleman rules official immediately was like, oh yeah, it goes over there. Yeah, the old rule used to be, he got him laughing and talking about something completely different out of this world. So that the whole thought process of why the hell was your ball over there already? And back to the Brandel thing, I think this is interesting still. He did correct himself, as you said, but the palming is still very interesting to me because the 16.4 rule that they brought up states that all the stuff he followed, but it says the lifted ball must not be cleaned. Now, you can't say for sure he cleaned it while he was palming it, Kenny, but certainly would be an opportunity for him to do so. So I think that's more where Brandel was thinking. And I go right with him there. Again, here's the last thing I'll say on it, because I don't want to draw it out long-winded, is that everyone said this today, and all the article titles love to jump on this. You know, the Tiger thing. If you guys just watched, we went through the Tiger doc a couple weeks ago, and people saw, what was the Nike statement? Was winning fixes everything. And everyone said that doesn't work for Reed. It's not going to, and he knows it. And that's my final point, is the best part about Reed is if you watch, he doesn't get defensive in the interviews to a point of being defensive, like mad or angry or like, why are you guys always coming at me? He just deflects and just, yeah. I think the same. When they start talking about his parents at the Masters, deflected. When they start talking about this week, deflected. The bunker, deflected. I'm just doing what I'm supposed to do. Go out there and play a good game of golf. I was happy with my mental state and resiliency, and I was able to close the door down the stretch. And for me, it's perfect because winning does fix everything. It fixes it to him. When he goes home, he's excited. He puts another trophy on the shelf. He puts a bunch more money in the bank. He keeps the villain thing going. And then on the flip side to the PGA, I wonder if, Kenny, I'll leave you with this, if the reason they ran out that session of 10 minutes and the reason they rehash it is because they know just as damn well as we do that having a villain in golf is a good thing. Not villainize the villain? Let's keep it going. It's going to piss everyone off. All they want to see is golf shots. Let's run this villain up even more so people just can't stand him even more. And again, like you said, the eyeballs that come with it, Kenny. So I thought it was great. I'm fine with it. Listen up. You give him that penalty, he wins by 3. It doesn't matter. He dusted the field. He played incredible golf. That's what Patrick Reed does. And he's an absolute closer. Great villain for the PGA Tour.
If you don't think people have been taking advantage of the rules for as long as golf has been played, you're out of your mind. You look at John Rahm, I forget what tournament it was, where he wasn't anywhere near close to a sprinkler head. It was in the fringe. It was a drive that he had in the fringe. But, you know, he got the rules official. He was like, this is in my way. He sort of battered the rules official a little bit, and the rules official gave it to him. And he was able to get 2 club lengths from it and drop in the fairway. Phil Mickelson,
I was just going to say, and not just that, to tell you off, how well did these guys know the rules? Look at Bryson. Yeah. Bryson was fighting forever on that 10. Remember, what about this fence? What if the fence was here? What if the fence? Uh-huh. These guys know the rules, like the back of their hands. And you think that's just so they know the game? That's not. It's so they can use them to their advantage and use them to get an edge. And as Xander said, the PGA Tour will protect them. Well, that's just the rules. And the funny part was about Lanto Griffin talking about how everyone's pissed off and 99% of the golfers would have went the other way. Fucking Rory McIlroy didn't go the other way. He actually went one step less and didn't call in a rules official, which you don't need to, as they stated. But that's why, again, part of Reed's charade was to bring in a rules official to close it out so that he could say at the end of the day, I talked to a rules official. They said we did everything absolutely correct, and therefore my team and myself feel okay with it. Boom. Game over. He did what he had to do, and it worked. And again, he still won by 5. So that's the bottom line.
Now, here's the thing. If you want to go back even farther, 1958, I think Arnold Palmer won his first Masters, right? And like, there was a thing. It was a 12th hole. It was a par 3. Palmer, he said it was embedded in the mud. On his shot on the par 3, it was an obvious drop without a penalty. But the official gets only half plugged. He didn't believe it. Okay. And so he ended up playing that ball, but then he went ahead and took another ball, played that and finished the hole with that ball. Okay. Because he didn't believe what the official told him. About 4 or 5 holes later, they're like, okay, we're going to count your second ball. And he would have probably bogeyed or doubled that hole. He won by 1 stroke. Okay, you have to know the rules, and you have to take advantage of them when you can. And that's exactly, I'm not saying Arnold Palmer cheated. I don't think he cheated at that point. Patrick, he cheated. But still, people have been taking advantage of the rules for as long as golf has been played. And that's exactly what Rory did. That's exactly what Reed did. Except that Reed was a little bit extra because he cheated, because he poked his finger in there and made that lip. Okay. But no one could catch him. No one could catch him. No one could say anything about it. So that's what happened. So for me, basically last week, enough of the rules fiasco. For me personally, again, not a great week, getting a little bit frustrated. The last 7 months, have been pretty poor for me. I thought I was getting back to it in the fall. I had a good fall. I had a good first week of Tournament of Champions. Last 3 weeks again have been garbage. The only thing that's been saving me, and what makes it more frustrating is the 18 months prior to that, before the pandemic, before the break, I'm blaming Corona for this. It was my best 18-month stretch ever in the history of I ever played DFS. Like, it was just unbelievable. I was hitting like 85% of my cash games, making a cut. It was ridiculous. And so And so it's getting a little bit frustrating. The only thing that's been saving me here the last few weeks is the betting aspect. Now betting is legal in Virginia, you know, and so I have a lot more books to choose from, a lot more type of bets. I would say the Luke List was my favorite bet, top 40. I got that at plus 220 before the tournament started. He went crazy on Sunday, finished that pretty well. Another bet that I won. I think you need to start paying attention if you have different types of books that you can go to and have different types of bets. The top 20 bet on Saturday night after the third round of the competition, I think I said this last week, I hit that again. I had JT Poston, who finished his third round with four straight birdies, was two strokes out of the top 20. And he was plus 700. That just screams value. And there's always one or two guys like that that I've seen the last couple of weeks with gambling being legal in Virginia. With some books having those type of numbers, I think you can find value. Check out the top 20s on Saturday night, because you can find some numbers. I think last week was Bo Hogue, who was a stroke or two outside of the top 20. He was plus 600, you know, and he just shot 600 the day before. So that's the way I've been making my money. Because of those, I put a huge bet on list top 20, up top 40. I put like $150 on it, which is a lot for me. You know, and that paid out plus 220. So it was like 340 or something like that. 350 that I won plus the Poston bet, which I had dead heat, which is a little bit chopped, but it was still money because I think Adam Scott birdied one of his last holes to make everyone move down to the 20th place. But still, I mean, like with that, it was a winning week. Same thing happened last week. It was a winning week. It's just I've been losing in DFS. So a little bit frustrating. We're going to try and get back on track. I'm contemplating some changes here and there, maybe just making one GPP lineup and putting it in a large money GPP, like $100 or $333 or something like that, instead of spreading around it 60 lineups in smaller GPPs. I don't know if I'm ready to quite make that move yet, but we will see, because the last 2 weeks, the last lineup I made each week was my best lineup. And that was like the lineup that I actually like didn't use the lineup generator or anything like that. I like just focused, pick my best players. And you know, and so we'll see. We'll see what happens. We'll see if I can get better, but I need to improve with the betting. The betting has been fun. Also contemplating maybe shifting more of my bankroll over to the betting aspect. We'll see how it goes though. Tampa, how was your week?
I think that last point you made is interesting, because a lot of people will be doing that. I feel like, right. It just gets frustrating when you're basically building a six game parlay every week in these, you know, PGA lineups. If for someone that's not playing 150 lineups, or maybe not, 20 or more, where they get to have some sort of a portfolio, it can definitely be a little bit more lucrative just to throw some of these bets together. There's a lot of good lines out there. You said it, shop around with your books, find different ways to get after it. So I don't hate that. And that's why we've tried to incorporate some betting aspects into this show. My week overall, man, not good. I do what you said there at the end every week, and it's been up or down, but this, you know, last year or so hasn't been the best. I've had a bunch of close calls in certain situations, Millie Makers, things like that. Last week was not the best. I've had to make my living in the LPGA, the League of Legends and NASCAR streets over the last year. But last week was like, it was just simple. If you didn't want Reed, and that doesn't matter. I make all my lineups on Wednesday night. I do use a, you know, lineup HQ. I do my show on there for Roto Grinders, and I go out and put it all together. A lot of good pivots and plays. You know, Hovland over Wolf was nice, but it doesn't matter if you don't have a bunch of the winner. I think I had like 5% read, well under, or I mean, it might have been close to field, because I think he was around 7% in the stuff I looked at today for the most part. But either way, it certainly wasn't enough, and it didn't have the right pieces to go with it. So not the best week overall. No bets. Scott was my guy. Did not come through. And Jason Day I liked, and he missed the cut. So Scott just completely disappeared. That's another guy that was right in the mix and just completely melted on Sunday. But he was starting to lose it on Saturday, too, off the tee. He was falling quite a while for that on Saturday to see what he could do down the stretch. But, yeah, we can hop into the Listener League, man, and talk about that, and then we'll get into this week.
I will say Showdown saved me as well. I've been pretty good at Showdown. I've been doing like one lineup, and it's literally catches like every time. I think I had like in the last 3 weeks, I've probably won like $200 in Showdown and put in like $35 worth of lineups. You know, so that's also been saving me as well. All right, but let's get to the Listener League for this past week. The winner is Pappy is King. I don't know if that's a bourbon reference or not, but Pappy is delicious. He won with 533 points. He had the winner, Patrick Reed, at 6.64%. He had Hovland, who came in second, of course, at 14.14%. Adam Scott, who ended up coming in 10th, 92.5 points. He was about 32% owned. Corey Connors, He came in 37th, 13.71% owned. Alanto has quietly been having a pretty damn good season. 2% owned, 89.5 points, finished in 7th. And Matt Jones, who made the cut, 6.2%, finished in 48th. What do you think of the lineup?
Yeah, first off, Pappy is king. Shout out for the win. We'll get you into the three-man see you this week. A lot of other good guys there. Winnie Boom Boom, Lloyd Bullard, our guy, Lukey G, my guy, Chris Negus, down in 7th. A couple guys that I know up there, so that was good to see. But as far as Pappy is king goes, the lineup was nice. I think the Lantel thing's interesting. We'll get to another guy later when we talk about the Waste Management Phoenix Open and Will Zalatoris, who we have to talk about some of these prices and say, what the hell's going on? But Lanto, maybe that rule's busted now, right? Maybe you can play him over 7. He's just so damn good that at 74, what's the difference? And when you get him at 2% and he rolls out like that, really good golf, man. 66, 70, 72, 72. Obviously, North Course helps for the 66, but for the rest of it, pretty solid. Matt Jones has been playing some good golf, made some sense. We were talking about for this tournament in general, we were talking about Australians and, you know, he sort of was on the list there, but Day, Scott were the two I was heavy on. And then you could have got on Leishman again for the previous winner and whatnot. So it made sense with Matt Jones. He's really been tearing it up. Scott, Hovland, Reed, obviously all make sense up at the top. And then Connors was another one that I thought just kind of interesting, right? He stands out because ball striking and that, but on a course, we actually needed quite a bit of short game and putter. That's surprising to see him up there, but T37, he was sort of the lone wolf to round it out that wasn't up the board. Overall, solid week, though. And, yeah, blew the field out. I don't remember. You'll probably know something off the top of your head. Kenny, what's the biggest win ever in this tournament over second? Because this is 533 to 499.
I think Tiger was the last one to beat anyone by 5 or more strokes.
No. Yeah, you're right there. And this was Reed was the first since with 5 stroke.
Oh, you're talking about the Listener League?
This was a blowout. It was 533 to 499 for Pappy's King. I don't remember the last time we've seen more than maybe 10 points or something. Like, this was a pretty good runaway. So good on them.
Yeah, it was good. He whooped everyone's ass. One thing I did like is I see three Gups Corner logos up there on the top 5. That's always good to see as well of those people down there. All right, so let's get to this week. PGA Tour heads to Phoenix, of course, at the stadium, of course, the TPC Scottsdale for the Waste Management Phoenix Open. It's normally one of the most exciting events you'll see every year, like 600,000 people come in there. But of course, this year, COVID put a little bit of damper on that. Only 5,000 fans a day are allowed on premises. Now, 5,000 is a lot more than the golfers have been having, lately. So, I'm sure they will be excited to see people on the course cheering them on. The stadium course at TPC Scottsdale is a 7250 plus yard par 71 with 4 par 3s and 3 par 5s. All the par 5s are reachable in 2 by the majority of golfers, and the 17th hole is a risk-reward drivable par 4. Always leads to a bunch of excitement on Sundays. The course was redesigned by Tom Weisskopf after the 2014 tournament. He was hired to make the course tougher, so he added length, made landing areas on the fairway smaller, added bunkers, and redid the greens. It looks like he did his job because the course has played a bit more difficult the last few years. In the previous 5 years before the redesign, Scottsdale was on average around the 36th most difficult course on tour. After the renovations, it's been around the 27th most difficult course on tour. Now, it's possible the higher scoring has something to do with the new greens being firmer the first 2 years, but the cut line here hasn't been better than minus one since the 2014 changes. Now, off the tee, golfers have seen narrow landing areas with bunkers placed strategically. Even though this tournament is played in the desert, water is still in play on about 6 or 7 holes, and if golfers miss wildly off the tee, they'll have to deal with desert vegetation. The rough around the fairways has been thicker on the last few years, and I expect that to be the same this week, though it won't be as thick as what we saw at Torrey this past week. The course is set up about 1,200 feet above sea level, and with the arid desert conditions, drives and iron shots and all that should go a bit further than normal. On approach shots, golfers will see a wide array of green sizes ranging from small to very large. Overall, the total green square footage is on the well above average. Bunkers guard the majority of the Bermuda grass greens, and water will be an issue for some golfers who aren't accurate with their irons. The greens are relatively flat, firm, and fast-ish with a stint meter rating of around 12. Of the last 9 winners here, 8 of them had a top 5 in one of their previous 5 events leading up to their victory at TPC Scottsdale. Now, in the last 4 years, 17 out of 23 golfers to finish top 5 here played Torrey the week before. And poor play at the Farmers really hasn't been too much of a detriment. It's, you know, very different courses, at least high up on the leaderboard. Of the 17 golfers that finished top five here and played tour the week before, six missed the cut, and five made the cut but finished outside the top 30. Tambo, what are you looking for in golfers this week?
It's one of those courses, Kenny. We're back to it. You know, I'm definitely not the course history buff, but this is certainly one that will bring it into play. You know, get your own, you know, back at least back in the day, 40% Ricky Fowler, and we'll run it out from there. But I'm not sure. This week will be a little bit more interesting. The pricing's extremely soft. Kind of love that we're doing the breakdown here Monday earlier, where we're going to get to go through it all and sort of break it down one-on-one and just see what we think we see here. And then, yeah, like the normal stuff, tee to green, approach, birdies are better, par five scoring, some proximity stuff. I think all of that still matters and comes into play, but certainly from what we've seen, it's, you know, who's been playing well, and then who's more comfortable in certain events and certain things. Like you mentioned Xander last week, we kind of hinted at that last week with less family and friends and things that he would have to tend to. Maybe he comes out and actually does, you know, sort of tame the demons a little bit at that course. And he did quite well, you know, had an opportunity at least going into Sunday. And then here, kind of funny, just thought of the first guy I thought of mentioning it earlier at the top, that I've been here the last, I think it was the 3 years, at least three, if not four, but the stories of Billy Horschel just tell people to go fuck themselves, even though he, you know, he wants to be there and he's excited. You know, once he gets to the crowd and they're all rooting for him or against him, he just starts flipping them off and going crazy. He'll have much less of that to deal with this year. So I wonder if that'll affect his play or something like that. So yeah, a lot of those things mixed together, Kenny, and then just realistically, it's going to come down to some game theory, some ownership, some pricing, and just piecing it all together.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely agree with you on that. I also like, you know, I think the approach games are going to be important. I think, you know, iron play from 150 to 175 and 200 plus stuff you're going to look at. Par five scoring, even though there's only three of them, has generally been a good indicator of success here as well. So definitely a lot of things to look for this week. And let's get into it. Who do you like up top? We got Webb all the way up to John Rahm. Who are you going with?
For sure, JT and Rahm. I know that much. These are just guys I'll play anywhere. I don't really care. Justin Thomas is coming back after his own little incident, but hopefully you've got his proper stuff that he had to go in. He said he had to take a course or something. So I'm sure his golf game is still just fine. So I'm going to trust that. His stats for me line up the best. I like Thomas at any course, but that's what, you know, JT, Rory, Rahm are three guys, that I always want to play. The difference is, you know, obviously that, you know, JT's coming off two thirds here in a row, some 17s before that, and Rory hasn't seen the place. But again, does Rory just show up here because why not? And also doesn't have to deal with all the fans or anything, right? It's much less fans. It's more than fans than they've seen, to your point, but much less than you would ever see at this type of course. It's usually, you know, sort of the zoo out there. So I think that's, you know, crazy when you think of, you know, the difference of a guy just showing up for the first time and the price is only $200, but it is Rory. He just hasn't been playing his best. So I'm Rahm and JT for sure. The guy that I actually feel like playing is Webb at 10-1, but I've got another guy I like a little bit more further down. We'll stick to the five-figure range, but I know he won last year, but do you think he's going to be popular? And then you could talk about who you like, but at 10.1, people normally don't like to play him anyway, and now he's sort of up there. Rory's just $500 more. There's lots of guys below. Could he go overlooked? Because if so, then I'll definitely be more interested in him.
I don't know. Who do you think is going to be more overlooked, Rory or Webb? People play Rory no matter what, right?
I've heard people talking about Rory all day already, and I already bet him. Like, it just, to me, it was a sort of a blind bet in the price. You know, I think it was 12-1. So that, to me, I'm just going to take, and you just don't see it or don't get it. And of course this would be one of those types of courses where Rory could just show up almost like an API when he just dusted the field and putting on Sunday and won like by five or whatever it was. This would be a possibility of that. I'm not saying he's going to go out and do it. I'm just saying that's why I'm betting it, because it's Rory. He wasn't horrible last week. He just wasn't great. And the other guys have been better, but I really feel strongly about Rahm and JT. I feel like people will go to Rory no matter what. So I'm probably going to go to Webb. That's my thoughts right now.
Before I get into my picks, game theory wise, looking at this top 10K range, do you think it's, here's the thing. You think it's possible fading the 10K range? Now, yes. I'll give you some numbers here. I think there's 67 combined worldwide wins between the six golfers in the 10K range. In the 8 and 9K range combined, I think they have less than half of that. Combined in the 8K and 9K range. Now, I think Stars and Scrubs will be popular this week just because there's a lot of value this week. I think the pricing seems soft to me. A lot of good golfers in that low 7K range. I think Stars and Scrubs will be popular. Do you think it's worth going contrarian and skipping the whole 10K range overall?
I don't know, but again, like I said, it's definitely possible. So I answered your question first. I said yes, because my thought process is this, is that while the names will look good in the 8K range, it comes back to what I always say is, you know, people will talk about them, but will they actually click them, right? Louis, Koepka, Wolf, Ricky, Bubba, this is all like, what have you done for me lately? Nothing. So if you haven't shown me anything, I'm going to talk about you as like you're this insane value, but I'm actually going to click you and put you into my lineups. So I think that's where that does make it a little more interesting, Kenny, where you can fit two or three of those guys in and do it that way. But then at the same time, if we see how the ownership's trending and if those guys start to be the sort of chalk zone, the 9K range, which we're about to get to after I let you roll out more in the 10K range, is just, you know, really strong as well. So that's what, you know, sort of throws me off there. I think one of the sort of, you know, most interesting plays this week would be to go in the 9K range, skip the 10K completely and skip the 8K completely and just do it that way. Because when you get into the 9K range, you've got Decky, Berger, M, English, Palmer, Scheffler, Zalatoris. And that to me is a spot where there's a lot of guys that are just as capable, and I'll get to the ones I like in a second, but I do like that range quite a bit at the top. As I said, it's just Rahm and JT for me, but in my portfolio, I'll have less stars and scrubs than what I think the field will have. That's sort of how I'll underweight the roster construction, if you will.
All right. So my picks in the top 10, my favorite GPP play is Xander at $11,000. I think his time is ready for a win. I don't think he's won in like 2 years. I think it's time. His games look good. He's had pretty good track record here. I mean, it's not the best, but never outside the top 20. I of course his iron game is strong. His bigger weakness is probably around the green, and you don't really have to worry about that too much in this range. But he's one of the best par five guys out there. Makes a ton of birdies. Good on longer par fours. So you know, any par four from the 400 yard range, he's solid. So I like Xander. My first cash game cornerstone though is going to be Justin Thomas. You save a little bit with him and you have a little bit better track record. Now I've been going about it back and forth all day. I wrote my article around 6 o'clock. It's what, like 8:15 right now, 8:30 Eastern Standard Time. We're recording this pod on Monday. And, you know, in my write-up, I said I was probably going to go Webb. I wrote that a couple of hours ago, but just looking more at it, I decided to go with Justin Thomas just because of his iron game. You know, Webb's iron game hasn't been as strong here recently. It's a lot of his putter, but he's a good putter. So that's why you can't really just gloss over that fact. You know, he's done a lot of stuff with his putter because he's a good putter. That's what he's good at now. But I'm going to go with Justin Thomas because, of course, the only thing missing in his game a lot of the times is the putter. And these greens are flat. We've seen, like, Benny On come in second place here. So you know that, you know, you've seen Finau come in second place here. So you know shitty putters can still do well as long as their ball striking is good. He's one of the best out there. So I'm going to go Justin Thomas as my first cash game cornerstone. Now, when it comes, I might play somebody else. I'm not 100% sure. I'm probably going to go based on ownership here. I'm not going to do the contrarian thing. I'm going to stick with these guys up top. I'll just take us into the 9K range. Again, I had decisions here for cash. It was either going to be Berger or Willie Z. Now, since I went Justin Thomas, I decided to go with a cheaper guy with Will Zalatoris to give me a little bit more flexibility when I make my cash lineup this week. So my second cash game cornerstone is Will Zalatoris because he's been one of the best ball strikers on tour since he's come on the scene. This year, I think he's top 10 in both off the tee and approach. Small sample size, but it's enough. We've seen enough of him to know that he's an excellent ball striker. You know, he doesn't let stuff get to him a lot of the times. The rookie, he wasn't playing that well on Sunday. He battled it out. You know, he didn't play that well on the back nine on Saturday either, but he battled it out, still got minus one on Sunday with that eagle on 18. I think he has that mental fortitude to be a really good golfer. I said last week that I didn't believe him at 8,400 or whatever he was last week was viable. But the more I saw him this week and seeing his game, man, his ball striking is so freaking good. And that's what wins here. So Willie Z is my second cash game cornerstone. I love Daniel Berger as well. So Justin Thomas, Webb, Berger, and Willie Z. I think all four of them make really good cash plays. So you can go any which way you want with them because I had to boggle in my mind to try and figure out which ones I wanted to do. And I went with JT just because of his iron game and Willie Z because of his price compared to Berger and his ball striking. But I like Berger. Again, a good track record here. Really good on 400 to 450 yard par fours. There's a bunch of those here. Birdie maker, tee to green. He's really, really solid. He's been putting his ass off here lately. He's sort of turning into a mini Webb. His putter's never was as bad as Webb, but it's not as good as it has been now. And of course, his ball striking is pretty damn good as well. So I like him also. And then I can't decide between Palmer and Sungjae. So how are you going this week?
I'm really surprised by that. I thought the Willie Z would be a bigger conversation. You're literally in cash. So that to me is crazy. But I'm with you on a couple points. You know, one is obviously how good he is. We were talking about him since last season. Everyone has been sort of in our little bubble, but those on TV might not know who he is. That doesn't matter to us. I'm just trying to say, like, yes, it's incredible that shot down the stretch, the eagle, you know, everything sort of was awesome to watch, but this price just seems way off. And there's so many guys in here. Like, for me, my absolute favorite play probably on the slate right now is Harris English. For everything considered, price, value, stats, history, everything. It's not
ownership. You know, it's going to be low after what happened last week.
Yeah, sure. But, you know, we just said that, you know, I laughed about it this morning when I was doing the review show for Roto Grinders. And I said, it was just a few podcasts ago, Kenny, the title was, is English the new Webb? Who won last year? Webb. English has been playing his ass off. This is a perfect setup. I think it's great. You know, all the stats line up that I talked about earlier, can scramble, can putt. Like, it's all right there. He plays such a good game. I do like Sungjae. I do like Berger. I got to make a decision on Hideki, though. This guy's Best Buy pricing again at 9,800. They just messed with me, man. But it's just, and of course, the history that he has here and the ability. But I don't know. I like English more than Webb. And that's why I brought up Webb earlier, because I think that's where I could just see, forget it, just play Rahm, JT, hop down into this range and pick up a few guys. And for me, it's definitely English and Berger. That's for sure the two that I'm on. I could see him, like you said. But then again, it's this Rahm and Palmer thing. We haven't spent enough time on that. I know it's all narrative, but it's literally every single time since they won the Zurich together that they've shown up. And so if Rahm's going to do well here, Palmer seems to be the guy to follow him. I have no clue why that is or what's going on with them. I mean, stats-wise, they pop up pretty similar in their own ways. You know, for birdies are better, a little bit of scrambling, things like that. I think the around the green game helps. And then, of course, just tee to green approach, Palmer can get on and get hot. Like you saw last week, again, even beat Rahm by a stroke overall for the week. So, and that's at a tougher course. That stands out to me. But like I said, that if I just go Rahm and JT up top, then I don't mind plugging a few more guys in here. I have to make some decisions on Im Matsuyama. I think Im is probably the guy that I go to. I just think he's so strong. And that's the other thing, like Im versus Willie Z. Willie Z has been great and is a top 10 machine, but Im has actually looked really good, been on his game. I know he blew up a little on Sunday, but before that, it was looking like he could make a bit of a run, and he's won term. He won the Honda. Like, we were right there watching it. This guy is also got a really nice swing and more than capable. So English, Im, Berger right in the middle there, and maybe be off my guy Hideki and off the guys at the bottom for me.
All right, let's move to this 8K range. I have no idea what to do here. I'm playing Bubba. I think last week was just a warm up. This is a Bubba track. Play Bubba on Bubba tracks. I'm going to play Bubba. But outside of that, I don't know what to do, man. You guide me on this shit because I'm having a hard time. I want to play Matthew Wolf. Do you think his hand injury was bullshit because he shot 7 over on the first day?
I think so. If you watched George Gankus and stuff, had him on Instagram and some videos and stuff like that, he looked fine, didn't have a wrap, didn't have anything. I'm not going to call the guy out. I don't know him. I don't care. I'm just saying it just didn't seem like he was fine, as far as I knew. And this is why I said in the past, the injury reports are bullshit, because everybody would have this lingering injury that, again, it's kind of like bending the rules. If something doesn't go right, you can just say it. I know there's like bigger things in place if these guys just bail on a tournament. So they obviously have to come up with some sort of ailment or something that doesn't allow them to continue, because they can't just shoot a 7 over and bail. They can, they do, but they do it within the rules. Back to the same thing of bending it. Look, he had a lingering wrist thing that no one in the world would ever know about. They're independent contractors. Therefore, on to the next week. I'll certainly go back. I don't really care about it. Like I said, I don't think it was, not calling the guy a liar, I just don't think it was 100% real. So I guess I am, but I'm just saying that's no problem for me. I'll go back to Brooks Koepka. I'll play Ricky Fowler and Bubba for the course history. I'll play Horschel for the fact that, like I said, I already like him here at this course. And now I think it could have even more upside. I like Harmon, Henley. Like, this is why I said I like the 8K range. So if it looks like the top is going to go that way, maybe I'll do that. Or maybe I'll use a 9K guy and a couple 8K guys. Like, I like all of this range. Bubba stands out the most because Bubba is, you know, what's the saying? You play Bubba on Bubba tracks. Third, fourth, second, fifth, 14th, 15th. Like, this is all within the last 7 years, 8 years. This guy just dominates this course. He knows it well. Ricky, pretty much the same thing. So I like both of them. I've got a bet out on Ricky. We'll get to that later. I've got a bet out on Koepka. The odds, I just don't care. Kind of like, you know, that's what I'm doing right now. Just blind betting these guys because the odds are just,
yeah, 50 they're going to win. Is wild. 50 to 1 is wild. For
yeah, Koepka. On Koepka is nuts. It's to say he's going to win. And I know everyone has the narrative of regular season events and whatnot, but that's fine. I think if you put him in 50 tournaments, he's going to win. So I'm gonna take him and bet on that. So
but the worry, you know, the worry I have with Koepka is he shot even par on the South Course the first day. It's not bad, pretty good. You know, a Torrey, it's not bad. Then shot four over on the North Course, right? The easy course. Sure. I know the weather was bad, but like,
yeah,
like I just don't understand. I have no idea where his game's at. Like,
yeah, and that's sort of the idea. And tournaments.
Like, you had that the week before, when he was like four under one day and then four over the next day. Like, I think he has good rounds in him. But he just hasn't been able to string two in a row. And so I don't know what to do about it. I'm going to have to play somebody in this range. And the only one I'm sure of is Bubba. So it looks like I'll probably play Koepka, but I haven't gotten burned from him the last 2 weeks because I was pretty big on him. But it's hard for me not to go back.
This is the thing. It's priced in. It's 8,800. And maybe coming back to a course that he has won a regular season event at in the 2015 Waste Management Phoenix Open. Maybe that sparks him a little bit, Kenny. Who knows? I don't know. He was mentioned a few times. He's another guy like Reed who gets sparked off of little things. I said it last week. I thought it would be off. And it's still going, right? It was the Claude Harmon stuff didn't go away. It's Reed stuff took over for that. That was a bit of a storyline before the Reed stuff all happened, right? Where people were saying, look, and his third missed cut, that's what all the articles were about on Friday afternoon, right? When he missed it and he went, you talk about his training and going away and left him after the Masters when DJ won. It was kind of like a part ways because is he jealous? Who knows, right? He's got four majors. He shouldn't be jealous. And he doesn't seem like that type, but certainly feels like he could come back out and do something here. And it is priced in. He's 8,800. It's not like you got to spend a bunch of money. He's not 10K.
Yeah, that's true. I think I'm going to play him also. Let's move to the 7K range. I'll go with my third cash game cornerstone.
Wait. Back up.
Go. You got more?
No, I just want to know you. Like that, you said nobody, but let me talk to you about this one. Woodland, Henley, Siwoo, Harmon. Anybody down there?
I'm going to play one of those guys. I'd lean Woodland, but he looks so bad on the weekend. Henley's ball striking or his iron game has been so good. But again, he didn't look great last time he was out either. Was that just a phase he was going through? His iron play was just so good for like 6 months and it's over? Probably not. So it's probably worth a look for Henley. I think the way his iron game is, I think that's the way it is now. And with that strong of a game, you know, he's ranked first in strokes gained approach in this field in the last 50 rounds. Second tee to green, you know, really good on the 150 to 175 par proximity. You know, which is going to be a lot of your iron shots, that and 200 plus. Really good on the par fours. Stat wise, it just looks like Henley should fit. And that's the way it's been going. I'll probably play Henley. I'll probably play Woodland. I'm just not sure about it yet. I'll have a better idea in my write up on Wednesday.
All right. Go ahead.
So 7K range. I'll go with my third cash game cornerstone. We're going Max Homa. I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that, you know, his iron game's been strong the last couple of times he's been out. He's going to his home. You know, he gets to sleep in his own bed. I think he lives in Scottsdale. Finished sixth here last year, I think 20th or something like that the year before. So a good track record. And he also said that his game is just about there. And I believe him watching him. He's performed pretty damn well the last couple of weeks. And I think, you know, he's found something after having a little bit of a lull. So I like Homa as my third cash game cornerstone. And this one's going out a little bit, but I like Henrik Norlander. I'll give the credit to the Tour Junkies for this one. Loves Pat, love DB, met him at the Players' Championship a couple of years ago. Really nice guys. They had Norlander on the show. And they were talking about he was talking about how he plays better his third and fourth week that he's played in a row. And I tend to believe him just looking at it at his numbers. And also, you know, his iron game has been filthy here lately. I mean, like, you know, even though he had that miscut thing in the fall, he was still gaining strokes with his approaches every freaking week. And in the 3 weeks that he's played, in the 8 rounds that he's played, 10 rounds he's played this year, he's gained almost 10 strokes with his approaches. You know, he gained, you know, almost 15 strokes tee to green his last two events. Ball striking is key. I'm going to take the narrative that he says he plays better when he play in his third and fourth week out in a row. I'm going to go ahead and take that risk. A little bit risky. I can understand if you don't want to play him. But, you know, I got to do something different Either I'm going too safe or not safe enough. I don't know what the deal is. So I'm going to go with Norlander. So my four cash game cornerstones this week are going to be Justin Thomas at 10,800, Willie Z at 9K, Max Homa at 7,900, Norlander at 7,500. A lot more aggressive than I normally would do. A lot, for me personally, just looking at it, a lot less safe than what I would like it. But safe just hasn't fucking worked for me here recently. So we're going to try something new, basically. I'm just going with numbers. Basically, what it comes down to, other than Homa, and Homa's more recent numbers. Other guys I do like here, I like Corey Connors at $7,900. I think he looks good. I like him as a bet this week. Ball striking again, excellent. One of the best tee to green on the tour. It's just he sucks at putting once again. And this is a course where we've seen shitty ass putters play well. So I like Connors. I'll play a little bit of Carlos Ortiz. He faded on Sunday, but this guy's got a little bit of grit. He's been in contention more than a couple times since the fall, including his win. I think he's going to be good. I think we could probably say he's the best Mexican player out there. Over answer, I would say at this moment in time, the guy's pretty fucking good, and I'll take him at $7,800. Who do you like up top in the 7K range?
That's so funny because what was I going to say? Oh, the Mexican thing, because you mentioned it. Like, what, first it was answer is better than Ricky Fowler. Now it's Ortiz is better than answer. Yep. So Ortiz is the GOAT now. Kenny, you got all the guys moving up the charts, man.
He's moving up for me, man. He's moving up.
this range is nice, man. I like it as well. Like, especially up in that upper, 7,900 area, because you got, Connors, Homa, Ortiz all stand out. I have to go back to Jason Day just for talent, Kuchar's course history. So these guys pop a little bit, even Gooch, but the guys I'm highest on there would be Ortiz and Homa. Just what they've done lately, what they can do. So you just mentioned, I don't need to rehash it. Homa, the joke, he's going Homa, like that, that's where he's in Arizona. I don't mind it, but I'll be following him, man. I like his game, what he's been doing. It's been showing up. You mentioned it, sixth here last year, rocks the jersey on 16. So I think he's a good play. Ortiz is just the upside. I was kidding there, but you talked about it, but everything that's been going with it. Norlander, you might've sold me. I was going to say, when I, think about Phoenix, I think about cactuses. When I think about cactuses, I think about desert. When I think about desert, I think about sand. When I think about sand, I think about Sunday, when we both tweeted at the exact same time. Man.
The dude was living in the bunker, himself. Dude. Living at the beach, dude.
He literally went like four or five.
He had suntan lotion. He had the fucking waves crashing on his feet. He had the beach chair. He was just living at the beach all day Sunday and still finished second.
Henrik Hasselhoff in second place. Yeah. He just took it down. So
Henrik Hasselhoff. I liked it. I like that.
I thought that was good, man. This guy just, and one of them, he holed out. So it just, that was the first thing that made me think of the Mirfield Village and the Memorial thing was, just watching him with the short game too. Like, when he's holing out bunker shots and shit, that just brought me back to the Memorial where I remember sweating him and it ended up costing me like $50,000 because of his short game on Sunday and he could not miss. But like you said, if you look at his stats, I like the little Tour Junkies nugget there that you brought up. Shout out to them. That's solid. I don't remember that part, but yeah, that was, I've used their stuff for another nugget with, speaking of answer earlier, answer talks about liking going out in the mornings. So if you ever get answer in showdown, I like using him because I think it's just a spot where he said he likes getting up early. He likes getting out, getting the round underway and being fresh. So those are just some little things there. I think if you go down, Chris Kirk is an interesting one to me, stands out. He's done well here in the past. He's definitely turned himself around, right? We've seen a big sort of resurgence for him, and he's coming off of a 16th and a second. He did miss the cut here last year, but that was sort of in the midst of everything. And before that, he's 50th, 11th, 34th, 37th. He's at a 24th before that. I think there's opportunity there with a guy like him. You mentioned Norlander, and I'll go into the bottom range here. Sabatini, Benny On, a couple other guys, John Hu, Luke List. I think they stand out. Wyndham Clark, Adam Long, Munoz for sure. We didn't talk about him earlier, but I always like him. And then Ches Reavy and Laird are sort of the course history guys. But the ones for me, Johnny question mark has just been doing his thing, at a relentless level. It's just been nonstop. Last week wasn't the best for him. But if you go before that, he was like basically top 25 every tournament he played before and after the break. Ball striking, everything's been on. And then you've got the other guy I was just talking about there, Munoz. And List, they're just two guys that, again, upside for what they are and their scoring ability. List is sort of turning it on right now, man. I'm not sure if that's going to stay consistent. Do you got any thoughts on him? And then who else do you like in the lower 7K range?
Like eight of his last 11 top 10s have come on really hard-ass courses. This is not a hard ass course. So a little worried about that. Like his top tens have come in like Muirfield, the Honda, PGA National, you know, Bay Hill, you know, courses like that, Farmers last week, Torrey. I mean, they're coming like courses. I don't think he's had a top 10 in those 11 starts. I think eight of those 11 top 10s that he's had have come on courses where the win score is under minus, not is worse than minus 15. So I don't know. He could be very popular this week, and it could be a time to get off of him. We'll see about that. So it might be the time to get off on this type of course. I'm not 100% sure. I'm not 100% sold like I was last week. On him,
yeah, if he's like, going to be super chalky, I'll ask you that real quick. Don't cut off. But do you think he just picks up so much steam? Because if that's the case, this is certainly not a course where you need to play a bunch of chalk, especially in the value plays. Yeah. There's just, you know, you're telling me that, you know, Wyndham Clark, Russell Knox, Adam Long, Aaron Wise, Sepp Straka. There's so many names here. You can find one without having to bury yourself into 20% Luke List if that's what we end up seeing come
Wednesday. Knox interests me again. He was my cash game cornerstone last week. As I went to Wednesday, I wanted to change him, but I don't change cash game cornerstones after Monday just because I feel like I'm obligated to play these guys since I tell you these are my cash game cornerstones on Monday. But I was very, very close to just changing him on my write-up on Wednesday. But I think I've done that once in my life. And I just don't like doing it. I think it's just bad juju, you know, just because I'm trying to give you guys my cash game cornerstones. But I wasn't feeling him as the week went on. I liked him in the beginning. But I'm sort of more tempted now. His history here is pretty good. Iron play has been good, except last week wasn't that great. You know, from 150 to 175, he's very good. Good on longer par fours as well. So I'm tempted by him. Michael Thompson, another guy. This place is loaded. The guy's been having a couple of good runs here lately. Again, a lot of it has done with the putting, but he's normally been a good putter. That's his normal thing. Benny On, I'm going back to in this range. Sabatini, whose course history is not good. We'll see how that ownership plays out because he played so well last week. He actually beat the other Rory. But his course history here is not great, but he's been playing some damn good golf. I like Adam Long, Cutmaker. I think he's viable in cash down here, down below at 7,100. I think he's made 8 of his last 9 cuts. I think he finished 6th here last year. So a lot of value down here in this low 7K range. Let's move on to the 6K range. I'll go ahead. I like Keegan. Like I said, with Keegan betting on, you just play him on courses where ball striking is important and just hope that they're putting average. I mean, the upside will be there because they're so good at striking the ball if they just putt average. Now, the odds of them putting average are very low, you know? But, I mean, I think it's still worth a shot at this price. Other guys I do like in this range, I'm going back to Harold Varner. Maybe he just shook off a little bit of rust. Again, the stats line up, iron game strong, good with the 150 to 175, good from 200 plus. Those are going to be the ranges that you want to focus on this week. So I'll go back to him a little bit. I might play a little bit of JT Poston. This could just be recency bias since he won me some money on Sunday. So we'll see about that. Other guys, Doc Redman seems like a value down here. Again, with his iron play and ball striking at 6,600. Robbie Shelton. Also down here, I don't know what his price is. I forgot what his price is, but 6,500 for him. You know, he makes a ton of birdies. He's really good in par fives. So I think he's another guy that you can use down here. I think Will Gordon's another guy that you can use down here. It makes a ton of birdies, makes a ton of big numbers, but there aren't too many big numbers to be had here unless you hit it in the water. So I like him at the cheap range. The best iron player from over 200 yards in this field in the last 50 rounds. Which is pretty shocking for a guy at $6,300. Who do you like in this range?
I'll give you a couple here. Just one second. I wanted to check one thing.
Michael Kim. But while you check, just remember, everyone just remember, Rory cheated too. Just remember, people. remember. Tie
that in. And that might be the title. Who knows? But hey, yeah. I was just looking down. Michael Kim was at 6,000. I looked. I was like, didn't he make the cut last week? Yeah.
So I think he's made 2 cuts in a row or something like that. He missed like 875 cuts since his last win.
Yeah, 2 of his last 3. He's made 2 of his last 3 cuts. So yeah. 6,000. Yeah. I'm certainly not on him. I just thought that was interesting to bring that up. But I was
great last name. Great last name.
Great last name. Will Gordon. Brian Stewart, these guys always sort of pop for me, just, you know, down in this range. There'll be guys that, you know, have an approach game. Gordon has the upside. He was right there last week as far as DK scoring goes. So when you drop him down to 6,300, get maybe an easier course. Lashley, guys like them down there, that they can all do a little bit of damage. You've got Danny Lee down there. We've been waiting for him to pop a little. Sam Ryder, I don't know if he'll get much love. He was right in the mix. But the thing about, you know, Ryder, Ortiz, those guys last week, they were sort of stuck in the middle. They're never really in, you know, that type of field strength and sitting where they are, and especially Ortiz in the final group on the last day with a, you know, a tough Torrey Pines South course with big, big names on the leaderboard like that. That's much different than your average. And, you know, obviously Ortiz is a tour winner. I'm just saying that was an example of nerves, I think, more than anything else. It doesn't take away from his talent or where I would see these guys this week. So I'll go back to Ryder, especially at a course like this where you can score. We're always on our guy, Tom Hoagie. I think this is good. Doc Redman looks great at 6,600. I think he's fine. You mentioned Varner. I'm in on that. I agree. Denny McCarthy, some more value. And then your Streelmans, Glovers, Ryan Moore types, these guys can show up here. Earlier, the two sort of boring guys we didn't mention are, Steele and Reavy, two guys that have some great course history here. So I think they would be interesting. I'm going outside this range for a second. And then Joel Damon, Stuart Sink, Tringali, that sort of range. These guys have all shown up at times. Joel Damon was ripping it up here. I know during Outlaw, he was in Arizona playing, and I think he shot a 61 or a 50, just crazy scores he can put up. So I think he's going to be interesting to see what his ownership shows up at 6,800. And then we'll round it out with this, maybe a good little segue, Kenny. Keegan Bradley, 6,900. Always does well here for the most part. Got the ball striking. We need the putter to show up. You joked about it. Normally doesn't show up. But usually our problem with Keegan is on Sunday is he has to get back home to watch the Pats play in the Super Bowl.
Oh, yeah.
The Pats are not in the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Tom Brady is.
Yeah,
what are you doing with Keegan Bradley? And does it matter that Tom Brady's in the Super Bowl? And then what are your thoughts on the, you know, we can go off Keegan Bradley. What are your thoughts on the Super Bowl for this Sunday? It's a golf show, but curious to hear what your take is with this one, with the GOAT of all time, Brady, to most. Some will argue it arguably the best, versus now the new age guy that everyone's crowning in Patrick Mahomes, looking pretty damn good to go back to back. What's your thoughts on this game?
I think it's going to be close. I think the Chiefs win, but I think the Brady covers. I think it's going to be a 1-2-point game, last second field goal, Butker to win it. Like, Brady drives it down with, like, you know, with like 3 minutes left, scores a touchdown and take like a 1-point lead. They miss the 2-point conversion, and then they go leave Patrick Mahomes a minute left. Ooh. With a couple of timeouts, brings him down, Butker, like 48-yard field goal. He completes like a third down with like one timeout left and 18 seconds to Kelce for like 25 yards to get him to like the 32-yard line. And then you see Butker kick it to win it. That's what I'm seeing this week. I think the Chiefs win, but Brady covers.
I'm dead over here because you literally broke it down to they get him to the 32-yard line. And you've got – you wrote a book on this thing before you got on here. You were ready for that question.
I was ready.
I do see it as a little bit closer. I think everyone has the Chiefs walking away with it right now. I know there's some big money coming in on the Bucks because obviously there's Brady lovers. There's people that are just instantly taking that side as the sharp side. I don't know. We'll have to see. I think that, the O-line will get talked about more as this week goes on, with them already losing their left tackle and now their center. And Mecole Hardman got coronavirus today or whatever, or in the protocol, let's call it. I don't know if they have it. They're in the protocol.
They don't. They said if they test negative, they'll be able to play.
Yeah. So I assume they will test negative and be able to play. Yeah. This is what it's all about, man. Bend the rules, man. Bend them like Beckham and you can do whatever you want. Right. We talked about that. I'm sure that's what they're going to want, the best possible guys on the field if they can.
I mean, Brady's a cheater and he's considered the best ever. Right?
Hey, there you go. That's what I said earlier. Everyone says cheaters never win, but Brady and them win.
Brady wins all the fucking time. He's a motherfucking cheater. So
it'll be good. I'm excited for Sunday, man. I love this week because you got the Super Bowl and Waste Management back-to-back. So I'll be good for that, man. Other than that, not much else to talk about here. I think we hit on everything except for the bets and the one and done, Kenny. Where you at?
All right, bets this week. I got Xander. I think he's going to win. I'm taking an 11-1. I got... why can't I read my writing? Berger, 22-1. Willie Z, 40-1. And I will say, 15 top 10s in his last 21 events. I know a lot of them have come on the Korn Ferry Tour, but they also came at the Farmers. They also came at the U.S. Open. This guy's fucking good.
Probably should bet him top 10 then instead of winning.
I mean, I might do that. We'll see how it goes. I mean, you know, those bets come out Wednesday for me. This is just the outright. So I try to get him in early before the numbers move. I got Palmer 50-1, Connors 80-1, Norlander 100-1. Those are my six bets this week.
Yeah, I have to look at Norlander. I got four right now because I'm, you know, super low on the board. I got Rory 12-1. I got Harris English 25-1. I got Brooks 45-1, and I got Fowler 50-1 with the each way because he's not likely to win, but I could see him definitely showing up again. We didn't talk a lot about him earlier, but it's pretty obvious. We talked about the course history factor and just, you know, turned it on a little bit. Didn't really, can't really find his putter right now, which is odd for him. So if he does that, that could be, you know, coming back to his stomping grounds here where he's done so well in the past. Maybe that's what he needs to rejuvenate himself. I also forgot this earlier in the stats with Fowler was I saw it today. He's outside the top 50, right? So as far as WGC goes, not happening. I think he has to really do well at these next two events to even be at the Masters. So that's got to be some motivation for him. So I like that 50-1 with the each way in on Fowler.
All right, my one and done. I got three choices. It's either going to be Xander, Berger, or Willie Z.
God, Willie Z, hey? This is what I got to go back and figure out because tonight, I mean, it's just killing me with all these other
guys. The ball striking is so
it is good. It's so good. And then you remember
5.3 strokes tee to green at the Farmers, 8.6 at the Shriners, 10.9 at the U.S. Open, 10.9 at the U.S. Open.
Yeah, and this course is just so easy to rip up. And if he's on, like, man, holy shit, that could be huge. So
I think he's like 6 and off the tee and 8th in approach this season.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. We all know what it is. It's just, yeah, it's whatever you, yeah, it's always, that's what you got to sort of get out of your head, I guess, for me as well in DFS, right? When you're looking at it, you're just seeing the 9K price tag and it's just sticker shock, right? He's if he was 8,900, I'd be all in.
I was in the same boat with you as last week. Last week, I was like, I ain't paying $8,400. Right. But I just watched him same. And I saw him. And I, like, the guy is so good tee to green. It's ridiculous.
And then you see him stripe it on 18 and go up yeah. Eagle. And you're like, well, damn, that was a mistake.
That shit crossed the edge right there. I was like, motherfucker, I'm in. Because he could have just been like, fuck it, I'm out of it. But he kept on fucking grinding and made the Eagle to get inside the top 10. I mean, shit.
Plus, when he needed it, remember like last season we were following him, the whole thing was he needed to get it his own way for the exemption. And he just went out and did it. He's a closer too, man. And that's a different type of close. Maybe he didn't win, but some of those fields are pretty tough or, you know, a lot of guys in there that could close the door. And for him, it's like he just kept executing on what he needed. You tell him he needed to do something, he went out and did it. So love to see that. For one and done, Kenny, I'm thinking using up just one of these guys I don't give a shit about, like Ricky or Hideki, and just play the course history angle and see what happens because I don't think they're necessarily the most popular just because of course history. I think that boat's kind of sailed off. So I think that ship sailed. I think more of just using them up to have some fun with it. And it's early in the season. When else am I going to use Ricky? Like I said, he might not even make the damn Masters. So who knows how many tournaments I'm going to get to use him in. So I'll try it out here and go with him or Hideki.
All right, so I think that's going to be it. You can find me on Twitter at KendoVT. You can find my article each and every week on GupsCorner.com. Article is up already. I'll have my favorite DFS plays, my favorite bets, all that good stuff on Wednesday. Tambo.
Yeah, you guys can find me on Twitter at Toteg and Tambo. Hit me up there if you got any questions. I officially made the news. Everyone, you know, more people are tweeting at me. I'm giving the Tiger Woods card away at 9,500 now. So if you don't follow me yet, follow me on Twitter. If you find your friends, tell them, tag them, whatever you got to do to get it involved. I still want to give that card away. So I've got it set aside for everyone. I will give it away. Just want to make sure at least hit something, right? It's all about hitting targets. Back to what I talked about earlier, the sales world, Kenny, you got to hit your targets. So other than that, find me on rotogrinders.com. You guys can head on over there, rotogrinders.com/dgen. Now you can get yourself 10 bucks off. It's all set up to go. So try it out. Check it out. Going to do the Tuesday show with Noto and Cards, the Wednesday show with a special guest each week going over lineup HQ, exposures, everything that we go through with building the lineups. And then Monday, I do a review show with, you know, back on roster construction process, everything that people used to get to the winning lineups and their player pools. So check it all out. Other than that, have a good week.
All right. We finally get fans in a tournament and never, ever forget Rory cheated too. Let's win some motherfucking money. DGen Nation.